So, as promised, my next guest is not on the line. He's actually with me in a studio. He is James Erdang. He's the founder and CEO of Education Africa and now an author as well. You might have been earlier. I'm not 100% sure, but author. Author of a book, My Fight to... No, that's not the name of the book. That's not the name of the book at all. What is the name of the book? It's got Impossible in the title.
Good afternoon, Simon and RFM listeners. The name of the book is It Always Seems Impossible.
It Always Seems Impossible. That's a real make you wake up and take notice kind of a title, because it takes guts and it takes courage to start an endeavor which you think is going to be impossible. We're going to talk about the book in great detail in a moment. I just think it's really important that you set the scene for me and talk to me about Education Africa, which I know nothing about. What is it? What does it do? And what's its aims?
Well, Education Africa is a non-profit organization. Yep. I founded it in 1992, so I started working on it earlier than that, the official registration. And we make real change happen by providing poverty alleviation through education. Obviously, over more than three decades, our programs have chopped and changed, but we've got a school in Orange Farm, which we're celebrating our 30th anniversary next year, Masbambani College, which we partnered with St. John's College. It's a Category 1 school, so being in a poor community, last year we got a 98.1% matric pass rate.
No, you've got to be joking. I didn't expect that.
Yeah. Government university passes, our bachelor passes, are sitting at 47%. We're at 76%. We amassed 59 distinctions. We got 1,261 kids there. And it's a really high-performance school in a Category 1 area. Then we concentrate a lot on training of preschool teachers at a SACWA NQF Level 4. We have 8 training centres. This year we'll have 190 teachers graduating. We also train our own trainers. We have an internship program to do that. We have our mentorship program, which supports the teachers back in the classroom. We've got 87 schools linked up, 100 teachers, permanent basis. We've got, we also have our Marimba program, which we did some collaborations in the past and great partnerships with Sydenham Highlands North Hebrew Communication. And there we have 38 centres. We have over 2,000 kids in the program every year. It concentrates a lot on inclusive education. So we trained the first deaf Marimba band that played with Lady Smith Black Babaza, visually impaired, physically disabled. And we have over 2,000 kids a week in the program. In fact, CNN's done 3 documentaries on our Marimba program. And we build preschools through etc.
I'm listening to you as you talk, and I'm being just blown away by everything that you're saying, and I'm thinking it all goes back, not that I'm King Jew, mind you, by a long shot, but about the highest level of charity. It's not giving a man a fish, it's teaching him how to fish, and that is exactly what it seems to me that you're trying to achieve with Education Africa.
Correct. Tikkun Olam, change the world.
Yeah. In the most fundamental way. What's your story? How did you become involved with this?
So I've got my own educational struggles. I started school in 1971 at King David, Victory Park, and I couldn't read or write after the first year. And in those days, it was called word jumble, which is dyslexia.
So you say that again, word jumble.
Word jumble.
Okay.
I also got ADHD, so it wasn't a very good mix.
In case it wasn't enough.
Yeah. Okay. I went to Crossroads in those days. Was at a house in Parktown for special needs, and they mainly concentrated on English and maths. They didn't have the subject choices they have today and the different things. And because you were this wild child and not quite sure what was going on in those days because no interventions, I was also at Tara Hospital.
Oh, my goodness me.
As an outpatient in the children's clinic for 3 years. And it was a very safe place for me. I actually enjoyed Tara. I've been back for a visit when writing the book. In fact, I remembered everywhere I was. It was when I mainstreamed at St. Cillian's, it was hard because other kids found out. And I struggled through schooling, so I never got a matric. I got a school leaving certificate, which I'm very proud of. The kids helped me through school, I think, a lot. And also,
the genesis of the title of your book started there,
yeah,
right there.
Correct.
I mean, there's no ways that a kid with all these obstacles in front of him is going to achieve what you've achieved. It started at 8.
100%. And I think that's what gave me the drive. I wanted to always help some other kids. And one day I had the opportunity through the transformation to democracy of starting Education Africa. And that was always my dream, to build a school, to help kids that had struggles like I did, obviously in a different sense, because most our kids have struggles because of the legacy of apartheid and Bantu education and the failing of the ANC in the delivery of education.
That's it. I mean, there seems to be so much goodwill in this country, so many people who are prepared to donate of themselves, their money, their time. But what do you do when the infrastructure isn't there to support you? What do you do when you establish a school in Orange Farm, but you can't connect the water taps and the toilets don't flush, and the, you know, you're up against issues, infrastructural issues that just almost make it impossible? If I'm sounding a bit defeated, it's not because I want to be. It's just it's tough out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's impossible.
No, it's clearly not impossible, but it must just be very difficult.
Absolutely tough, and you're often relying on donor funding. Obviously, our school gets a government subsidy, being a Category 1 independent school. But they cut the subsidies to the Category 1 schools to 44 schools, which it freaks me, because it amounted, if you look at the increased number of schools that they assist, to 201 million. The original 44 schools got a cut. Of that 201 million, what makes it more bizarre is Gauteng Department of Education a couple of months ago had to give back to Treasury $3 billion of unspent money. So they're not even talking amongst themselves, and they're putting black schools at risk.
So this is what I've heard, and this is what I've read about, that it's not actually an issue of finance or money. The money is there. The issues are elsewhere.
Absolutely. There's money. Obviously, corruption and everything hits away, but there is enough money to support especially the top black schools, and they should be supporting them more, not cutting back.
James, you're a white Jewish man. Who's listening to you?
I talk, believe me. I've got a voice. If you look at my background further on in the book, I've got very much a voice, and I talk, and I'm not shy. I think I'm also at that age that...
You don't care so much
anymore.
I
love South Africa. I love our people. I'm here. I've dedicated my life to community service, and I've got to stand up and be counted.
At what point did you realize, hey, I can make a difference with this vehicle? Education Africa has legs. It's going to actually affect people's lives. When did that happen?
Do you know what? When you start anything, I would say the guess the same in business. When we started Education Africa, believe me, I didn't know that it was going to grow into the organization it is today. I look back and I think, wow, I can't even believe that we're still here. But we are here, and it's because of the kindness of others, chesed. If it wasn't for chesed of individuals, businesses, and I'd say mainly individuals internationally, we wouldn't exist. And there'll be more kids slipping through
the cracks.
Cracks, yeah.
So linking back to that title, because it just is so powerful, it always seems impossible. I mean, apparently, it wasn't always good times. You've had your struggles. This organization is... it's been precarious at times.
Yeah.
What made you soldier through it?
So, for my background, I always have my claim to fame. I was actually mentored by the late Walter Sisulu, and I worked with Nelson Mandela.
How did that happen?
I got on the phone and found the ANC. Got chutzpah.
James Erdang, I want to talk to you.
That's basically what happened back in 1992. And he took a liking to me, and we worked together, and I did some historic work with Nelson Mandela and built up a fantastic organization. A lot of my book obviously talks about that relationship. I got a very strong glowing forward from the Nelson Mandela Foundation, who helped with the book and the accuracies around my work with him, and they honored me in August 2023 with a press lunch at the foundation to take all my memorabilia and work, etc., to put into the archives forever with Mandela. And they said, Mandela next to James, which was... But then I said in my talk, they always said, why we only found this out now? So I said, because my number one was Sisulu, and he'll always be. But the organization grew, and we had a lot of support from HSBC, fantastic support for many, many years. And they had a new head for HSBC Africa, a chap named of Krishna Patel, put in place. And to cut a long story short, he progressed on a hostile takeover of the organization. Mm-hmm. As HSBC is a trustee, the whole thing's very bizarre. There was forensics done. They said they'll never know the answer unless it went to court or anything. And they tried to get rid of myself and my colleague. And we went through a year of absolute intimidation, unbelievable intimidation, till eventually when we wouldn't go, they suspended us with no charges. In fact, told us to take all our stuff out the office. Eventually, they brought trumped up charges and the case fell apart. And that I call the 7 weeks. And I took on HSBC. It was really David versus Goliath. They settled the organization after covering it up in the UK. I got the paper trail all the way up to the CEO, and I name everyone in the book involved. And part of it was to sign a non-disclosure.
Yes.
But I refused to sign because it wasn't fair. As Lord Peter Haynes said, who got involved also in one of his open letters to the National Crimes Agency, and this actually is and still an open case with the National Crimes Agency, is that they rewarded the wrongdoers and punished those making a difference. So people at our office lost their jobs. People landed up on antidepressants. So they can't work again through the massive amount of intimidation. And they haven't really put it properly right. And it's only now, and it's taken years and a lot of people's support to speak out. And I think South Africans need to speak out. I tell my story. And it's a bizarre story. In fact, a twist in the whole thing, my cousin eventually came chairman of HSBC globally.
There's divine justice if ever there was. So let's get back to the book. Mm-hmm. When did it germinate? Why did you write it?
So for many years, people have been asking me to write my story. And I've been umming and ahhing. And I think that's Bichette, it's the right time. I won a Swiss International Award for my work in 2018. The foundation there said that I should also write a book. And then they funded me and asked me to at least put up a website. And then they... the journey of the book. But the journey's been a long journey.
It's
been up and down. So I started about 2019 and was a failure.
Interesting.
And then, which I was warned about the first time.
Yeah, if it's impossible.
And I don't think so. You learn. I don't to write a memoir. Then it's taken about since then, it was published in September. It took about 3 years and a lot of work. And everything in the book's got evidence. And I mean, I've even got my nursery school books, the reports from the 60s. And yeah, I think I'm a hoarder. And it's the nice compliments that I've been getting, it's a page turner. And I'm very blessed that Exclusive Books have also been backing it a lot. So they did 4 official launches at the different Exclusive Books. They're pushing it now. There's in fact an ad of the book in the Jewish Report this week. And yeah, I think the book is about hope. It's about resilience. I mean, I was in Canada at the end of last year, in November, at the University of Manitoba. I was invited to do the annual Peace and Justice lecture. 3 of their past lectures were Nobel laureates. And I talked about social cohesion through peace and justice and how we built Education Africa. But one of the questions that came out is, at the end, had nothing to do with my talk. What's happening in the Middle East?
I'm out of time. I was wondering whether you would have written the book again if you had to start today, whether the whole atmosphere hasn't changed that you might have thought, no, there won't be.
Absolutely not. So I'm very proudly Jewish in the book. And as I say, on the stage in Manitoba, and we know the anti-Semitism there.
Absolutely.
The first thing I said, I'm a Jew. I remember when the professor's looking at me like, and the eyes looking at me. And I'm proud to be a Jew, and I'll always stand up for that. And that's around Tikkun Olam. We need to all stand up. We need to show that we're Jewish when we deliver and change the world.
You know, what a treat that you agreed to come into the studio to talk about your book. And what a lovely message to leave us with today. Finally, the book's available where?
At all exclusive books. It's on the recommended reading list. It's also on the Christmas book list. So it's front and center, at least till the end of the year.
James Erding, thank you.
Thank you, Simon.